नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भगवद गीता एज इट इज Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 3, Text 33. Sadrisham cheshtate svasya,
Sadrisham cheshtate svasya,
Prakrite jnana vanapi,
Prakrite jnana vanapi,
Prakritin yanti bhutani, Nigraha kinkarishyati. Translation, even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature, for everyone follows the nature he has acquired from the three modes. What can repression accomplish? Purport, unless one is situated on the transcendental platform of Krishna consciousness, he cannot get free from the influence of the modes of material nature, as it is confirmed by the Lord in the 7th chapter, text 14. Therefore, even for the most highly educated person on the mundane plane, it is impossible to get out of the entanglement of Maya simply by theoretical knowledge or by separating the soul from the body. There are many so-called spiritualists who outwardly pose as advanced in the science, but inwardly or privately are completely under particular modes of nature which they are unable to surpass. Academically, one may be very learned, but because of his long association with material nature, he is in bondage. Krishna consciousness helps one to get out of the material entanglement, even though one may be engaged in his prescribed duties in terms of material existence. Therefore, without being fully in Krishna consciousness, one should not give up his occupational duties. No one should suddenly give up his prescribed duties and become a so-called yogi or transcendentalist artificially. It is better to be situated in one's position and to try to attain Krishna consciousness under superior training. Thus, one may be freed from the clutches of Krishna's Maya. This verse is sometimes misquoted. Many verses are misquoted, but this one is sometimes misquoted to attempt to justify wrong behavior or to attempt to justify not trying to control the mind and senses and blaming it on it's my nature. It's just my nature. I can't help myself. This is not the message of this verse. It has to be taken within the whole context of Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita. As Krishna will, in the next few verses, he will speak of how one should try to control the mind and senses by the intelligence. If we say that, well, it's just my nature to do something, then that is the animal platform. If one thinks that I cannot control myself, then that is an admission of being on the animal platform, because the animal cannot discriminate between right and wrong. In a crude way, an animal can discriminate between right and wrong. In a very crude way, an animal doesn't have any sense of ultimate right and wrong, but a dog can be trained, for instance, not... Yeah, that's one thing you should learn. You should take the training. Turn off your cell phone in an assembly when they're speaking going on. So in the same way, I was just going to give the example that an animal, like a dog, can be trained not to urinate and defecate within the house. So people who keep dogs in houses. Humans should be trained not to keep dogs in houses. Those who have humans, or not to keep dogs, is even better. Let's take it a step further. But those who keep dogs in houses, they can train the dog. And the dog knows that he shouldn't do that. And if he somehow or other does it, then he knows he's done wrong and he's likely to get his nose stuck in his poop, which is the one way of training them. So it's not really an understanding of right and wrong, but it's an understanding that if I act in a certain way, I will be rewarded. You teach the dog tricks. If it does the trick, it gets thrown a bone. And if he doesn't, he doesn't get any bone. So it's not exactly a sense of right and wrong. But a human being can understand what is right and wrong. And a human being is trained not to simply, even in non-devotional or non-transcendental society, even among atheists, there is training to act in a manner that one does not simply indulge one's senses without any discrimination or thoughtfulness. For instance, one might pass an ice cream shop and think, I would like to eat an ice cream, but you don't just go into the ice cream shop and help yourself. You have to pay. There are certain rules. You can't steal something. That's called stealing. You take something without paying. That is, so for the human being, it's of more developed consciousness, is not simply a matter of if I steal, I will be punished, but the humans develop a sense that is inculcated in them of there's something intrinsically wrong. If I take someone else's property without commensurately rewarding them, that is wrong. Of course, there may be cases where someone gives a gift, or there may be cases where a sadhu simply takes something, but that's, you have to be very careful with that also. The Brahmins, they theoretically have the right just to take anything from anyone, but they don't misuse that. So there is a sense of right and wrong, and one should act in a certain ways. Everyone has desires, but one does not simply indulge in desires. There is some sense of self-control. And one who is trying to come to the transcendental platform, he attempts to control his senses not merely in a manner that leads to social harmony, but he attempts to control his senses because he knows that is required for self-realization. And he knows that indulgence in sense enjoyment causes material entanglement and material misery. Yehi sangsparshaja bhoga dukha yonya evate adyantavanta kauntaya nateshu ramate buddha. Because he has become intelligent, he understands that interacting the senses with the sense objects might appear to be pleasurable, but actually it is the cause of distress, both in the stage of thinking about and planning about it, both in the stage of actually indulging one's senses in sense enjoyment, and in the repercussions. So for transcendental advancement, one should attempt to control one's senses. But Krishna says here that even a man of knowledge acts according to his nature. This is not a he or she construction. There's vidvan. So So the female form would be Vidyavati. So just for those who might protest that Srila Prabhupada is translating in a sexist manner, that you can blame Krishna if you like. Couldn't repress myself from putting that thing in though. So even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature. So what does this mean? Does it mean it's completely hopeless? The attempted self-realization is just completely hopeless? There's no hope? No, one has to rise above one's conditioned nature, but at the same time understand that one does have a conditioned nature. The conditioned nature, that is not a permanent feature of a personality, but the personality or the character that we manifest in one lifetime is the sum total of all we've been through, all the experiences and desires that we've had in many, many lifetimes. And specifically in this lifetime, there are certain experiences that we will have to go through. That is destiny. And also the apparatus, the mental apparatus that we have, or that is also what we acquire from previous lives. Of course, in psychology, there is much discussion. Is the human being, is his psychological nature simply fixed at birth according to genetic codes, or is it acquired? And the Vedic version is both, that one acquires a certain kind of nature according to one's previous activities and desires. One is born in a certain situation, sadasadyoni janmasu. And also one is conditioned by association. But also the association one gets is according to our previous activities and desires. So it's all very complex. Krishna can understand it all. For others, we can understand some general principles, and Krishna here is instructing in general principles. Vedic psychology is superb. I mean, in Bhagavad Gita, it's apart from being a treatise of philosophy, not theoretical philosophy, but exposition of reality, along with that, in intrinsically intertwined with that, is Krishna's explanation of human psychology, which is on a completely different basis to that of various schools of modern psychology. Suhodra Maharaj made a book, Vedanta Psychology, which was a beginning. I mean, just like the mundane psychologists, they have libraries and libraries of books on psychology. So also libraries and libraries of books of psychology can be made Vedanta psychology. Srimad Bhagavatam takes the matter further, especially we see Jarabharat, he instructs in this. But the summary is all there in Bhagavad Gita, and on a completely different basis. First of all, although modern psychology deals with the subject of the mind, they don't know what the mind is. They don't know that it's all taking place on the platform of consciousness, which is the symptom of the soul, which is entangled in material nature, in prakriti, within the three modes of material nature. So they can only speculate, whereas Krishna gives real knowledge. So this philosophy and psychology, it's not armchair speculation, but it's important for all of us. What is the meaning of this? When Krishna is instructing Arjuna to change his consciousness or to change his decision. Arjuna's decision, he firmly decided, Nayotsya, I am not going to fight. So Krishna, in various ways, he wanted to change Arjuna's decision. First of all, he chastised Arjuna, he humiliated Arjuna, he made fun of him. Then he appealed to his sense of pride as a kshatriya. And ultimately he instructed him in transcendental knowledge. And transcendental knowledge includes knowledge of the non-transcendental. We see the non-transcendental in terms of ultimate reality. How is this non-transcendental world going on? It goes on the background of Krishna's control, mayadhyakshena prakritihi. So, if we see in context, Krishna wants to induce Arjuna to change his decision. He doesn't force him, but he wants Arjuna to himself make an intelligent decision to fight. And actually, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, he says, anywhere you'll fight. Nature is so strong. Anywhere you're going to fight. If Arjuna was to ask Krishna, well, what do you think? What's your conclusion? Should I fight or not? And Krishna said, don't even ask. You're going to fight anyway. But you have to decide in which consciousness you're going to fight. Are you going to fight on the basis of material acceptance or rejection? I don't want to fight, therefore I'm leaving the battlefield. So he leaves the battlefield and there he'll go in the forest and he'll see some innocent person being attacked by robbers and he'll fight or someone will send news that Yudhishthira's being surrounded and he's calling out Arjuna, Arjuna, and Arjuna will, anyway you'll have to go back. He won't be able to avoid the fighting. Krishna, he might chastise Arjuna, but if Bhishma was to chastise Arjuna or Drona, then even more likely he would go back because he's very concerned with what his gurus think about him. Not so much what Krishna thinks about him, because Krishna's his friend. He's not so much concerned what Krishna thinks about him, but his gurus, he's very much concerned. So, what can repression accomplish? By this, Krishna is teaching us that the nature which we receive under the present matrix, which we call the present body and the present identity that goes with that, it's very powerful. We identify with it, and even theoretically, if we understand that we're not the body and we're not the mind, but the way of thinking that we have acquired, not only in this life, but from previous lives, it very strongly influences us. And we should be aware of that when attempting to act in Krishna consciousness. And not suppose ourselves to have transcended it when we haven't. And again, this doesn't mean that we just have to surrender to all our material desires. Often we find devotees who are in the brahmacharya ashram and they say, well, I have to get married because I have all these material desires. It's not just you who have all material desires. Devotees come and say, oh, my mind is so disturbed. Everyone's mind is disturbed. Devotees think, I am unique in having a disturbed mind. It's everyone, but it's how we respond to it. We should see how to respond to it. And it doesn't mean that every brahmachari should also stay as in a brahmachari ashram. For some it may be more advisable not to. But it's not just that because, well, I'm struggling with these material desires. Oh, yeah, well, good. It's good that you're struggling with material desires. That's what you're supposed to do, because Most people don't struggle with their material desires. They revel in them. They think, oh, great, I'm feeling so lusty today. Non-devotees, non-transcendentalists, they say, oh, I'm an 80-year-old man and I'm still... They think that's something good. Whereas, and they even take operations. Srila Prabhupada said he knew some man when Srila Prabhupada was living in Allahabad. He knew some old man, Marwari man, who was 80 years old and went to Europe to get the sexual glands of a monkey put in his body so that he could go on being a monkey at the age of 80. But devotees struggling, that's very good. To struggle with material desires is good. To surrender to them is not good. So if we say, what can repression accomplish? Okay! Forget all this sense control. I'm going to be a grihastha. But grihastha means he has to control his senses also. It doesn't stop. Just one changes one's position. Otherwise, one becomes a griha medhi. So Krishna is warning us here that it's not such a simple thing that you just flick a switch and then now I am Krishna conscious. I often hear devotees say, well, when I first became a devotee, I think, oh, well, that's nice. Sometimes I'm asked, well, how long have you been a devotee? I say, well, I'm still trying. It's not such an easy thing to be a devotee. Hanuman's a devotee, and Gopi's a devotee. Who, yeah, where am I? Still struggling here, dressed in saffron, and the mind, when you pick up a stick and take sannyas, it's not that Maya bows down at your lotus feet and says, okay, it was nice knowing you, bye bye. She doesn't say that. She says, ah, this is going to be fun. Okay, girls, see what you can do. Hey, this is like a Manidhara class. See, I'm being affected by association. Yeah. Actually, I wanted to speak on this verse because Manidhara Prabhu, who, for better or for worse, blame me or not, as you may like, but I'm regularly in contact with him. And this is very much one of the themes that he takes up a lot, how devotees, they're acting artificially, not being aware of their nature. That's one facet. And another facet is national stereotypes, just like yesterday, the Germans. And you can also hear from him about the Czechs and the Croatians and everyone else. And it is true to some extent, or a large extent, that we can say to some, we can in a broad way talk about the German mentality or the Croatian mentality. And that also affects us. And it also affects our preaching. And we do see, for instance, it's very clear that people who are born in Indian families, especially in Indian Hindu families, are, generally speaking, we can say they are more likely candidates to take to Krishna consciousness. It's not because the body they have, but because of the cultural conditioning that they have, and they were born in such a family because they had the piety. Of course, that's mixed with impiety also, with material desires also, but they had a certain amount of piety which caused them to be born in a situation in which they are more likely to take to Krishna consciousness. And in some families, they are raised directly in Krishna consciousness. In some families in India, they have no touch with Krishna consciousness. I mean, even in Hindu families, they have no religious background at all, but still, because the whole general atmosphere is uniquely religious or particularly centered around the Vedic culture or the remnants, the perverted remnants of Vedic culture, so they're more likely to take to Krishna consciousness. Whereas someone who's born in another situation, less so. And even, as I've heard in the Philippines, people take very easily to chanting and dancing. They like to become devotees, but they may not be, they come easily and they go away easily also. They're not likely to take it so seriously. Or in Germany, if they take it up, or Japan, they're likely to take it up. If they take up Krishna consciousness, people are likely to take it up very seriously and rigidly, because that's their whole attitude to life, whether or not they're in Krishna consciousness. So, although it may be overly stereotyping, but different people are raised in different cultures and they have different attitudes and different things they value. In some cultures, the whole attitude is very relaxed, especially in countries where the temperature is generally high enough so that food can grow very easily and people don't have to endeavor very much for their basic necessities. People tend to be quite relaxed because they don't have to work very hard. That's not particularly true in India, but when the whole Varnashram, traditionally the whole Varnashram culture in the sense of dharma, that human life has a purpose more than eating, sleeping, mating and defending. But it's very much so in Thailand. The culture is not one of hard work, but one of relaxed enjoyment. Or one devotee I know who was in Thailand, he was an astrologer, and he says that Shukra, Venus, is prominent here, the mode of enjoyment. And in Polynesian islands, people traditionally don't work very hard because food is easily available, there's nothing much to endeavor for, and why work hard? Whereas in Northern Europe, where they have long, harsh winters, and they developed industry there, and traditionally the countries, France, Prussia, and England, have been perpetually at war with each other. So they, by their culture, they have the sense of work hard, do your duty, be determined. And Srila Prabhupada also noted that. He made some statements. For instance, he said that Russians would be first-class theists. It's not that there's a different atma in the Russian or in the Prussian or in the Czech, but cultural conditioning is very strong. What we consider right and what we consider wrong, some due to cultural conditioning, and again we're placed in different cultures due to our previous desires and our what we deserved in previous lives. So what is right and what is wrong, a whole attitude to life. The Rudyard Kipling, the British ultra-nationalist poet, famously wrote that East is East and West is West, and ne'er the twain shall meet, never will the two meet. Because the British, they went to and they couldn't understand it at all. They couldn't understand why the white man riles while the brown man smiles. The white man becomes angry. Why is it not on time? And the brown man just smiles. He's not concerned. So, here is the grave of a fool who tried to hurry the East, something like that. He tried to get everything working on time and he just died of frustration. So the whole concept, some attitudes are very conducive for taking to Krishna consciousness, whereas others are not. In some cultures, there's no sense of God. In Thailand, in Thai language, there's no word for God. Just like, probably in Polynesia, in their language, there's no word for snow, because it's just not an entity that has anything to do with their culture. So in the same way in Thailand, in Thai language, there's no word for God, not for God with a capital G. There's a word for gods. They have the gods. Buddhism borrowed the Hindu gods. So they have Indra. Pakisanat means Sri Krishna and so on. So they have gods, but they don't have God. So it's very difficult to begin to explain to people in such a culture that there is God, and they actually become angry. It's very difficult to get a Thai angry, but be careful if they do get angry, because they usually kill you if they get angry. They're smiling, but if they get angry, then they really get angry. So they really don't like the idea of God. Similarly, if we're preaching among Muslims, it may be very difficult to among many Muslims who consider it a complete blasphemy to say that God is a person. It's very difficult to convince them because there's so much. I had a long discussion once on a train journey, so there's plenty of time. So I had a long discussion with some Bangladeshi Muslims. Long discussion, point, is God a person or not? And they went just point by point, and just they gave one inch, then another inch, and another inch. Then I had them, like after about 2 hours, I had them cornered. And then they said, well, we don't believe it. You know, they weren't going to believe it, even if you completely philosophically corner them. So conditioning is very powerful, and it may be that some places are better for preaching Krishna consciousness, in as much as people are culturally close or closer. We see that in Catholic countries, where there's a system of authority within the church, and there's worship of demigods, the saints, and they have festivals with lots of opulence and color. People tend to take to Krishna consciousness coming from such a background rather than in Protestantism. And people in Protestant countries are more likely to take to Ritvigvad, in which Protestantism means me, the book, and Jesus, and no one else, nothing in between. So, well, that's Ritvikism, isn't it? Me and Prabhupada and Krishna, and forget everyone else. So, these cultural factors are there. It's point to be understood. We can also, in our preaching, take note of the culture that we are attempting to spread Krishna consciousness in. It appears that Srila Prabhupada, when he first went to America, he spent some time, he would walk around, take the subway in New York, and just meet people, and just, as it's colloquially said, suss them out, or try to understand where people are at. that even though we're all spirit souls and we all have our eternal relationship with Krishna, but how to present the philosophy, how to present the teachings in a way that people can understand. And also we can consider what is our own cultural conditioning, what we consider is right and what is wrong. We should understand, according to Shastra, Tasmat Shastram Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vyavastito. Gyatva Shastra Vidhana Tam Karyam Katam Yaharhasi. Within this world we should act according to Shastras, knowing what should be done and what should not be done. And that often contradicts or goes against the sense of what is right and what is wrong according to our cultural conditioning and according to what most people think is right and what is wrong. There are many things, in fact, almost everything that Srila Prabhupada said, which doesn't fit with modern culture. For instance, Srila Prabhupada, he endorsed capital punishment, which many people nowadays think is wrong. It's been banned in many countries, and there is a move to ban it in there is a movement to ban it in all countries of the world. Srila Prabhupada was against what he called the artificial egalitarianism, trying to make everyone all the same. And he was against having education, formal academic education for everyone. So this would be considered, many people would think this is just wrong. Why don't you give people the same opportunity? But Vedic culture gives everyone spiritually the same opportunity, but materially not. There's a reason for that, and Srila Prabhupada explained it. I'm not going to go into that now, but just the point that we may also be influenced by that and think that, well, you know, Prabhupada said that, but that's not going to fly in the modern age. That doesn't work. But then modern society doesn't work. We may be influenced to think that modern society is working. It is going on. It's very good that as Charles Darwin explained, there was some prototypical creature from which, well, he didn't explain in such detail, neo-Darwinism, and then humans evolved, and the ultimate level of evolution is modern man, especially Anglo-Saxons. And maybe Germans. See, my cultural conditioning is British, so we may be influenced by that. Actually, people all over the world are tremendously influenced. Not only do the British think that they're the best people in the world, but many other people in the world also think they're the best people in the world. They have a good propaganda machine. And the British is this standard of civilization in India, if someone gets a Nobel Prize, it's just like, oh, you got a certificate from the West. Oh, how wonderful. This is modern India. So this conditioning is there. Srila Prabhupada sometimes said that we should come before the spiritual master like a blank slate. That's ideal. But actually we're not. Although it's supposed to be Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Koriya Aika Ana Kori Hamane Asha, actually we're all bags of bubbling desires, like a volcano waiting to erupt at any time. Even it might seem very peaceful. This is a peaceful volcano, but it didn't spout for the last 200 years. But any time it can rumble and rumble and spout, and all the hot lava comes out, like hot lust comes out. So never trust a volcano. Don't trust the mind. And we understand also what is our situation. Arjuna, even though he considered himself to be Vidvan, he thought he was so intelligent he could instruct Krishna, although he was also submissive enough to ultimately accept instruction from Krishna, not very easily. Arjuna, he didn't just take what Krishna said. He had many objections again and again and again. But he was a good listener also. So he considered himself Vidvan. He knows very well, but he had to act according to the nature that he had. So Krishna told him to act in Krishna consciousness with the nature that he had acquired. Srila Prabhupada told the story of a thief who joined, his profession was a thief. In India there's barber caste, potter caste, weaver caste, farmer caste, and there's also a caste of thieves. The British killed many of them. They thought that was a good service to human society. So there are people who are by profession thieves. Once in Dublin, Ireland, I was distributing books, and when we meet people, we often say, "Well, what do you do for a living?" He said, "I'm a thief," which is Irish for saying, "I'm a thief." He didn't look like he was doing very well in his profession. So Srila Prabhupada told the story of a thief who went on pilgrimage with other people, and his habit was at night to steal things. And it was so ingrained in him that even when he was going on pilgrimage, he went into people's tents and stole their things, but he thought, "I can't steal, I'm on pilgrimage." So he just moved different people's things from one tent to another, and they got up and said, "Hey, what's your bag doing in my tent? And what's my bag doing in your tent?" And then thieves came and said, "Well, actually I did it, because I'm a thief, and I couldn't help myself. But I didn't really steal anything, I just moved it around here and there." So, overcoming our lower nature means to dovetail in Krishna consciousness. Arjuna, he didn't want to fight, but Krishna told him to fight on my ardha. Mam anusmara yudhyacha. Think of me, that's the first thing, that's the most important thing, but also you have to fight. So we find different devotees. That I was listening to a lecture by one of my godbrothers who told me about another of our godbrothers who'd taken sannyas. But he had such a strong Vaishya mentality that whenever he'd go from one country to another, he'd buy something in one country and sell it in another. And he developed the temple. He had all the devotees make all these schemes for making money. He was a very strong Vaishya nature. And although sannyasis aren't supposed to, but eventually he got married, and he's because maybe he wasn't properly suited for that ashram. But he's going on in Krishna consciousness to the present day, and I don't know very well, probably he's still doing the same thing. But you can do that in Krishna's service. If someone has the tendency to make a lot of money, do it, and then you can live comfortably, but give to Krishna also. If someone is not good at making money, there are many devotees I know who think they're good at making money, and then they just either whatever money they've saved, they lose it all, or they take a loan, and then they just have to get a shudra job and pay off all the debt for losing all the money in their business scheme. So they think, he did business, I can do it too. But they don't know, they have no feeling for that. They don't have the nature to do it. So this is another Mani Dhar Prabhu's themes, that people should be in the right slot and then things work. If you try to make someone, you can appoint someone, okay, you're in charge, but they don't have leadership qualities. You can send them to a leadership seminar, but they can attend 200 leadership seminars and they still won't be able to lead anything, because you can't make a donkey into a horse just by sending them to a seminar. You can train a horse to be a... Even then, there are racing horses. They're bred like that. You can't make a racing horse into a plow horse, or a plow horse, which is probably a defunct breed of horse now. Well, still in some places. You can't make that into a racehorse. You can't make a Doberman Pinscher into a Chihuahua, or vice versa. Women, they like to have a Chihuahua and get a Doberman Pinscher and bite their head off. Different nature. I'd like a nice little dog that the man brings home for a Doberman Pinscher. So they're different natures. So it's also important to understand our own nature and to act within that in Krishna consciousness. When one first comes to Krishna consciousness, the first thing to do is to learn the basic principles, but then afterward we have to see how to serve according to our nature. I'm over time, so I'll finish here. Hare Krishna. Otherwise, could talk a lot more about it. Hare Krishna. Any question or comment, please? Head down. Anything? Ah, yes, please. Yeah, all right. Okay. Yeah, please say. We shouldn't tolerate our material desires, we have to fight against them. Is this a statement or? We shouldn't surrender to our material desires. Every living entity should be happy. That is the right of every living to be happy. Yeah, according to Shastra, devotees should not have any desire other than to serve Krishna. How can we explain this apparent contradiction? Fighting material desires, grossly sinful desires, we should not think of indulging them. For instance, the desire to enjoy someone else's wife. There's no scope for indulging such a desire. But there is scope for mixing intimately with one's own wife in Krishna consciousness. The spirit of enjoyment should be mixed with or sublimated by the desire that, all right, I have this desire, but we also have a duty to bring forth children who can be raised in Krishna consciousness. Or one may have a desire to eat very nice foods. Not eating meat, and this is not allowed in Krishna consciousness. But we can, if we have such a desire, that can be instead of trying just to squash it out, we can ourselves cook for Krishna. And when we're cooking for Krishna, we have to think, this is for Krishna. I can't think how I'm going to enjoy it. So that desire for nice food becomes focused on Krishna. And then we can distribute that to devotees. Recently I was in France and one devotee mentioned to me the name of one of my godbrothers. And I knew him. In the past. And he was a tremendous cook. Vedic style, not French style. And he used to cook these just amazing preparations. And then he'd serve all the devotees. And he clearly took pleasure in seeing them relishing Krishna prasadam. And at the end, he would take very little himself. Myself, when I was first in this movement, I was overwhelmed by the tremendous prasadam. Anyone else like that? And I used to cook before I joined the movement. So after I was brahminically initiated, I was in the kitchen a lot because I thought, well, this prasadam is so tasty and so nice. I can also prepare for Krishna, and that will also, then my thought of how I can enjoy prasad, that will change into how Krishna and the devotees can enjoy. So in this way, we don't squash the desire, but we dovetail, was the term that Srila Prabhupada used. I'll take one more question, and then guess what? Time for prasadam. There's someone had a question of yourself. Yeah. Character and our nature. Are these two identical? No, they're not exactly identical because there is character training. And one's character, if one is trained in a certain way, then it becomes as if one's nature. One's nature is acquired under the three modes of material nature. But it's like a person, they're like putty, and there's different kinds of putty. Do you know what this is, putty? It's a substance that can, just like we can say, like soft clay. So there are different kinds of clay, and some is better for molding than others. Some people are not very trainable, but that's the nature that we acquire, and then it is the duty of the parents and the gurus, and traditionally in human society, any elder can chastise any junior, any child. If a child is doing something wrong, then any elder who they're in the presence of, even if they don't know that, even if they're not known to each other in human culture, which used to be all around the world, the elder can tell that child, don't do that, and maybe even give them a slap. Because it's the duty of every elder to train every child. Nowadays, you can't do it. If you even say anything to them, you'll be prosecuted. Even if the parent slaps the children, they'll be prosecuted. And so, people nowadays don't have any, there's no idea of character training. Such an idea is absolutely absent from any curriculum in any school. And instead, they give sex education. That you can have as many, it doesn't matter, you can have as many partners as you like, but you should be responsible enough to tell someone if you have a sexually transmitted disease. That's good character. So, that's the modern life. And use a condom. Hare Krishna. On that nasty note. Well, what's the solution, Manidha Prabhu? Distribute Prabhupada's books. Hare Krishna. What can we do for these animals? Watch out for the animal within. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.